Abundant wild fish and wild water are among the attractions of life here in the state of Jefferson, and it should go without saying that less water tends to mean fewer fish. The Yurok tribe in Northern California is concerned enough about the fate of fish to run its own fisheries department, and that department commissioned a study of flows in the Scott River, a major tributary of the Klamath River on which the Yurok and other tribes depend. Let's find out what the study found. Mike Belchick is the senior biologist for the Yurok tribe and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
How long has the tribe had its own fisheries department, and what got it started?
The Yurok Tribe Fisheries Department was established in 1993, and that's about the time that the Yurok government established itself as an independent entity, wrote its own constitution, and had its first elections.
So basically the fish has been of prominence since the Yurok established some sense of independence. Give us a sketch, if you would, Mike, on the Scott River, where it enters the Klamath, its importance to the Klamath, and so forth.
Okay. The Scott River is a major tributary to the Klamath River, and it enters the Klamath River about 150 miles up from the mouth, up towards I-5 and Yreka in that area. It's just west of I-5. It's about 2,000 square kilometers. I'm not sure how many square miles that is. But I think the upshot is that it's a pretty good-sized tributary, and it's really important in terms of contributing to the number of both Chinook and also coho salmon.
This is a big agricultural area, the Scott Valley. How much of that water is diverted?
Well, it's actually not a real easy question to answer because there's the land that is cultivated up there is watered via a combination of surface diversions and groundwater diversions. So there's the groundwater doesn't directly take water out of the stream, but it lowers the water table. And if that water table gets lowered enough, then the stream can start sinking into its bed. So it's a little more indirect and hard to measure than just measuring surface water diversions. But I think it's really important to understand that our study that we did here, we discussed and quantified the needs of fish for passage and rearing and other things in the Scott, but we didn't point fingers or make management recommendations. We simply said this is the amount of water that fish would need to thrive in this basin.
Did it get, I mean, really, really detailed then, like at this set of rocks, they would need about 3 inches of water, therefore the flow need to be this? I mean, is it that detailed?
Well, we did incorporate some field data. We went down to a riffle in the Scott River Canyon that had public access and where fish have been impeded in the past and took a set of measurements. But the overall flow recommendation was based on a combination of hydrologic information, in other words, information about flows in the past, as well as incorporating some of that field data, also taking a look at some of the other flow recommendations from California Department of Fish and Wildlife and things like that. California Department of Fish and Wildlife has stated their intention to do a very detailed flow study that incorporates much field data at points all over the basin. This study is intended to be an interim product until that one is done. In other words, we're worried that delays or lack of funding might mean that that report that Cal Fish and Wildlife is intending to do is either delayed or never completed. So we put something out for use in the meantime.
You wanted to have a data set in hand to be able to work with now rather than wait for further exploration.
Yeah, I think it's important when you're trying to find solutions and discussing with people that actually farm in the basin or with watershed coordination groups, that if you're discussing things that have consequences to flows, that you be able to understand whether the resultant flows meet the needs of fish. And that's what we intended to do with this study here.
Mike Belchik is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, senior biologist for the Yurok tribe. We're talking about flows in the Scott River, particularly in the lens of a report called An Evaluation of the Anadromous Fish Interim In-Stream Flow Need for the Lower Scott River in Siskiyou County, California. Long title and a lot of information in there. You can join us on the Exchange to talk about the subject matter, 800-838-3760 on the phone, jx@jeffnet.org by email. By the end of a dry summer like the one just passed, Mike, what's left in the Scott River, really?
Well, not much was left in the way of flows. So our recommendation was that about 60 cubic feet per second was necessary to pass fish, and instead we ended up with about 7 cubic feet per second. Now, it's important to understand that this is a consequence of both the surface and groundwater withdrawals that have been happening, but also just there's just been a real bad drought for a lot of years, and in particular, last year had almost no snowpack. So that meant that spring flows ended earlier. So everything's just kind of adding up to what happened this summer. It's important to understand that, the fall Chinook migration period came and went, and fish simply didn't have enough water to pass through the Scott River Canyon and get up into the reaches where their spawning grounds are. And the same is happening for coho salmon right now, the endangered coho salmon. This means that the fish are forced to spawn on top of each other down in the canyon, which has a higher risk of the eggs getting washed out or damaged from flood conditions later on this year.
So it wasn't a massive die-off in the sense of a bunch of fish floating in the water, but they had to spawn in places where they might not have otherwise spawned.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Let me get that number again. You said the minimum flow that you could see would be good there is 60 cubic feet per second, and it was down to 7?
63 to be exact.
63, okay.
And then in November, we were saying 127. That jumps to, let me get on the right page here. 147 in November and 400 in December. The most important months, I think, to focus on are August, September, October, and November. Those are the passage months for Chinook and coho. The minimum in-stream flows go up after that, but at that point, the flows are not able to be influenced by any management actions. We get into the dead of winter, and it's really more precipitation-driven.
Why can't? Is it because it's precipitation-driven or because there are no management activities taking place that do happen in the summer?
No, I was the opposite. I was saying in the wintertime, mm-hmm. and the springtime is the time when there are minimum in-stream flow requirements, but management actions don't have a real big effect on flows. Where they do have a big effect is, say, the August, September, October, November period. That's the time of year where the flows are really important for fish passage to get to spawning areas, and the flows are influenced in part by human actions, but also by drought, things like that.
There are frequent references in the report to interim flows. How do those differ from other kinds of flows?
Well, it's just what I was saying earlier, in that this product here is designed to be an interim flow recommendation until a more comprehensive and detailed flow evaluation is done by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, for example, has stated their intention to complete such a study.
Mike Belchik again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, senior biologist for the Yurok tribe. We're talking about water flows in the Scott River, a major tributary of the Klamath, and its effect on fish. You've heard some of the details already. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts, comments, questions. 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Now, I noticed that this was you actually brought in a company from San Marcos, Texas, to do the bulk of the work on this report.
Yeah, we enlisted the services of Dr. Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy is an in-stream flow expert, internationally recognized, but he also completed the Hardy Phase 1 and Phase 2 study on the Klamath River for minimum in-stream flow needs for flows released out of Iron Gate Dam for the purposes of supporting the anadromous fishery below that. So Tom has a lot of experience directly with the Klamath, even though he's located out of San Marcos, Texas.
All right, we have a call here from George in Wairika. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mike Belchik.
Well, thank you very much. you may have immediately just answered the question, because when you have fish spawning in late summer and early fall, if you did not have the dams, then those are the times of the extreme low rate of flow in the Klamath River anyway. If the dams are removed, then you're not going to have any real consistent flow during those period of time. I've walked across many creeks down south that are not dammed, and during this the end of the summer, they're almost dry or dry. How's that?
All right. Thanks for that, George. Mike, thoughts?
Well, there's a couple things. The Klamath River is supported by a series of very large springs, like in the bed of the river by J.C. Boyle, Fall Creek. All further up river, there's Spring Creek and Williamson River, a number of springs. So the dams themselves are not capable of storing water on a seasonal basis like other dams. Like Trinity Dam, for example, can release high water all summer. The Klamath dams are basically a pass-through system. The biggest one, Kopko, only has 35,000 acre-feet of storage. PacifiCorp cannot vary the levels of the dams very much without interrupting their power generation capacity. So the available data and calculations are that those dams do not influence summer flows on the Klamath River. The influence happens where they decide to release water out of Upper Klamath Lake and also from spring contributions.
As you mentioned earlier, Mike, the report is clear on not making management recommendations, but with the information that comes out of this report, and presuming there's one coming from California Fish and Wildlife, what kinds of recommendations are being considered, if any, at this point?
Well, you know, we thought it was really important in this flow recommendation not to point fingers, to place blame. I know there's a number of groups that are doing, trying to do really good things. There's Scott River Water Trust. There's Scott River Watershed Restoration Council. They're trying some innovative projects, installing some what you might call fake beaver dams, in order to try to get the river back connected with its floodplain and replenish, keep the water table up. And so we thought it was really important not to point fingers and simply do that. I think in terms of management actions that will be considered in the future, I think the effect of groundwater withdrawal seems to be closely looked at, both right near the river and away from the river. I think that there's a comprehensive look needs to be taken at water withdrawals in general, but also creative and innovative solutions like the fake beaver dams, restoration, connection with floodplains, floodplain water storage, and things like that all need to be taken a look at. Right now, I think that these projects and the attempts to address this issue are in their very early stages, but people are very interested.
We have an email here that came in just before you started talking about beaver from Bruce in Ashland. He says, this used to be a beaver-controlled river. The Army Corps of Engineers channelized the Scott. Now it has dug its channels deep so that the groundwater is lowered. Pumping then lowers it further. Free the Scott River, says Bruce in Ashland. How much activity has gone on in the way that he's talking about, with the Army Corps of Engineers doing work in the actual river?
Well, I think he's really nailed some of the larger-scale landscape issues that have happened on the Scott. And so, yeah, he's right. The Army Corps came in, channelized the river, kept it from meandering. The beavers were extirpated from that area, all of which results in groundwater that is depleted during the summer. It's important to note that the basin as a whole is not in long-term groundwater deficit. In general, except for in the most extreme drought years, the groundwater table does replenish itself every year to the top. It's just a matter of when that happens. So when you reduce the groundwater, it means that the first fall rains, like that are happening right now, soak into the ground and go to replenishing the water table and don't go towards overland flow. So if you look at the Scott River this fall, if you look at the flows, you can see that. They were flatlined at 7 cubic feet per second at the Fort Jones gauge until about 4 days ago. Now they're at 14. both of those flows are too low to pass fish. But in terms, you know, getting at the larger picture of the fish habitat and what's going on with the Scott, your emailer was exactly right. The river's been channelized. That means that riparian vegetation with the groundwater withdrawal can't grow. Then when the river does flood, it jumps its banks and does a lot of damage, leading to even higher levees next to the river. It's a vicious cycle. And this has happened on rivers across the West. The Scott's not unique in that. But it just plays havoc with fish habitat and flows.
Oh, so it's not a meandering river in that sense anymore. I mean, the levees make it more of a swift-flowing conduit, really, sort of like an irrigation ditch.
Well, it's not quite just a straight irrigation. It's not the Los Angeles River, that's for sure.
Okay, but, fair enough.
But it has a lot of the meanders, and a lot of the beaver dams have been taking out. That disconnects the river from its floodplain, and with definite consequences to aquatic ecosystems and salmon.
So I sense this report is the first step in a very lengthy process, or at least another step in a lengthy process.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable first step is to understand what the needs of the fish are so that you can evaluate innovative approaches to the problem.
All right. Mike Belchick is the senior biologist for the Yurok tribe, and we're talking about the report on interim stream flows in the Scott River, one of the major tributaries to the Klamath. Mike, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on the air.